Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by an old friend, colleague, and currently the Chief Information Officer of Fairview Health Services, Dr. Samir Badlani. Samir, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Nick. It's wonderful to speak with you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
So, Samir, you're historically an internist. You're a physician, but you have a title that says Chief Information Officer. You're one of those unique individuals that has run through medicine, you've practiced medicine, and you'll now focus on the technology. Tell the listeners a little bit about your background and how you arrived at this point.
Sure. Yes, it's definitely been a fun and interesting journey. So I did start off as a physician and an internist specifically. I had the privilege of being faculty at University of Chicago. So I used to practice in the transplant medicine group and also supported the solid organ tumor services on the inpatient side. And as I mentioned, the privilege of teaching there, so the residency program and the School of Medicine. My fellowship time was focused on medical informatics. So honestly, that's where the appreciation and the awareness of the opportunity that technology and information sciences bring to the delivery of healthcare was a pivotal moment for me. And that started in University of Utah, where initially I thought I would do bioengineering, but quickly realized I'm horrible at bench research and was very lucky to be in a place where informatics was one of their strongest departments. Clearly, you know, if you were to write a history book on informatics, University of Utah would be one of the places that can claim started the movement 40 years ago with Homer Warner Jr. And I was very lucky to have met him towards the end of his career. So that's where the journey started. While I was at University of Chicago, I worked on the Epic implementation beyond my clinical and academic duties, and was able to translate that into, after about 4 years of pro bono work, as I say, to becoming their first chief medical information officer. And that was wonderful. Got to work with Eric Yoblanka, who was the CIO there, now is the CIO at Stanford. Was very impressed with how he approached his job and how patient-centric and organization-centric he was. And I guess that was the first time I thought about, maybe one day I can be a CIO. So I always acknowledge that when I run into Eric. After that, I was recruited by Intermountain to be their first chief health information officer. That was, again, a very different role from what I had at University of Chicago. It was much more broader, got to learn some really good new skills. And then I eventually was hired by Sutter Health, where I was the chief health information officer and also their chief data analytics officer. In both these roles, which adds up to about the last 5 years of my career, I worked with wonderful CIOs who allowed me the space to grow and take on new skills. And that eventually led to my getting the CIO job at Fairview Health Services in Minneapolis. In many ways, you know, I don't see this being much different from being a physician. I feel if I get a particular project right, I can benefit millions of patients that we proudly serve. So for me, it's an expansion of my clinical mission. It's not a, it may be a different scenic route, but I still feel like I'm in the service of healthcare.
It's interesting you call it a scenic route going through medicine. It's full of some very diverse scenery and experiences. And I think, you know, I love your concept of that expansion. It's one that I feel personally as well, the ability to sort of impact many more people through that extension through the technology. But technology is not the sort of central aspect. It's an enabler, as I often quote Michael Dell in this instance. Technology has always been about enabling human potential. So as you think about your new role, obviously exciting, you know, this is hardcore. You've moved from that transitional physician, CMIO, chief health information officer. Now you are the chief information officer. And it sounds like, you know, some significant individuals that helped you get there, and indeed a play in terms of some of the concepts and the methodologies that they've applied. Tell us a little bit about what you're bringing to Fairview. I think it's a relatively new role for you at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely a new role from a title perspective. As I reflected on my career journey, the last 5 years working as the CHIO at Intermountain and then at Sutter Health, I was very lucky to be exposed to big portions of what a CIO role is, had the opportunity to lead teams, to manage budgets. So it was good growth that I experienced from a learning perspective at these two organizations, and I'm grateful to my colleagues in both places. For me, the way I look at my job at Fairview M Health, which is a reference to our partnership with University of Minnesota, is focused on how do I get technology to one of the points you make, becoming a true enabler of the human potential, but then also to become a co-pilot of organizational strategy in what our value proposition is, what our business competitiveness is. If I were to say, how will I be successful 3 to 5 years from now, is I want to be able to talk to you and others and say I have these multiple examples of where information technology and services contributed to the strategy and business competitiveness of my organization. That's what success looks like to me. So working ourselves backward from that particular point, there are two concepts that I use to really drive my thinking. And again, I did not come up with these. You know, it was in a conversation listening to Ian Morrison. And then he spoke about some of the work that Dr. Ranjan Gulati at Harvard has done around building resilient organizations. And I think that's what healthcare needs right now, is a lot of resilience. We have margin pressures. We have changes in the consumer expectation mindset. We have big tech players wanting to become piecemeal healthcare providers. We have payers jumping into this space. So, you know, when I think of what does healthcare need the most, I think it's resiliency right now. And Ranjan has a wonderful way of breaking it down into that you then, to be able to succeed, need to go through dual transformation or dual disruption. And to elaborate on that a little further, the first aspect is reinvention. And the idea of reinvention is that you look at your current set of capabilities and services, and how do you deliver those in a materially different way? So you're still providing the same set of services, but how do you make sure it's more efficient, it costs less, and you do more of it? And while doing so, you consume less money, time, resources, and people. So that's the focus that I am putting on myself and my team right now, is how do we reinvent the way information technology and services do what we do today? And the idea is that that's going to free up time and bandwidth and energy, honestly, to reimagine our value proposition to the larger organization. And for me, that's the patients, the consumers we serve, but then also the employees and the care providers that we serve. And that reimagination of our value proposition is where we can truly become more resilient to take on the business competitiveness that we really need to.
So if I tease out a couple of points that you made here. So every man and his dog thinks that they can do healthcare, sure, and they're all jumping in. And that requires, you know, certainly the existing players from a survivability, if you don't want to be a blockbuster, as an example,
right?
To essentially create this resiliency in an organization. And what I'm really intrigued about is when you talk about that reinvention process, is that taking everything back down to nothing? You know, destroy everything, all bets are off, you know, blank sheet of paper? Or is there some concept of taking the existing infrastructure and processes, because, you know, throwing it all out? How do you approach that? I mean, I think you're right, but that's a challenging proposition in this, you know, storied, long existing profession and system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a little bit of everything. Well, let me give you an example. Most organizations that you see around us who deliver healthcare collect a large number of applications. Some of it is really going down to the basics. We collect all kinds of applications that come our way. Sometimes we have multiple instances of the same application. And if we spent, 10 to 20% of our bandwidth for the next 2 years with a laser-like focus on application rationalization and go from maybe, what I think is an average number of 3,000 applications that exist in any healthcare organization and bring it down to maybe, 600-700 that you truly need, that would make a material difference in using up less time and resources in managing those. So that's a very simple example of what everybody recognizes should be done, but never truly makes it up in a substantial way to the goals of the year. So that's something that I'm going to change, trying to change at my organization. In other ways, we speak about this digital medicine revolution that we are going around right now. And, I often am amused that there are people who think that all we need is a good, fancy UI, UX-enabled app in front of our patients, and that will materially change what it means to experience healthcare. Well, that's unfortunately not true. And now I think there's a lot more awareness that you first have to become digital to the core, and just putting an app in front of a patient does not change the 1960 DMV type experience that healthcare generally provides these days. So, there are organizations, like if you look around at Ochsner Health, they do a wonderful job of truly disrupting themselves to provide better care, and their notions around digital medicine, I think, are very powerful. So one example that I can share of how we are looking at, again, still in the reinvention phase, is, like any organization, we have to replenish and refresh our wireless infrastructure and our paging infrastructure. So instead of, doing a paging refresh costing multi-million dollars and a wireless refresh costing another millions of dollars, how can we look at getting away from having both a pager and a wireless and enable secure communication and truly meaningful communication between our care providers, just leveraging the wireless connection and really making our physicians and our workforce enabled with probably putting a smartphone in their hands versus a pager. So not that straightforward, again, requires a lot of business architecture, business requirements, and workflow enablement through design thinking. But those are the kind of examples that I would put in front of you that we are truly pushing ourselves to say, are we doing enough? Are we doing enough to take out poorly leveraged or unused technologies in our ecosystem? Are we maximizing what we think we want to use? And how does it truly make a measurable difference to the workflow within the organization? Because only then can we be efficient in front of the consumers that we serve.
Right. And it's do you feel like this is a really significant pivot, or have we already started this process of moving much more towards that focus on the patient ultimately? I mean, I know we've always been focused on the patient. I don't want to diminish, years of history and, all of that engagement. But there's this real sort of, it's almost buzzworthy of, patient engagement. But what you described to me is a real sort of, I don't want to say pivot because that feels wrong in this context, but a real focus in that way, but underscored by technology that sort of thinks about it in that context. Is that true, or am I sort of off the mark?
I think you are spot on. This is not a pivot by any means. If anything, it's a reemphasis that in technology, we have the opportunity to push harder at the problem. I think patient centricity, or rather consumer centricity, has always been there. But what has changed, and I think you are insightful in picking up on that, is no longer the pace of change is defined by us. The pace of change is defined by other businesses like banking, retail, entertainment, that are providing much more digital and consumer-centric experiences, and the patients are bringing that expectation into healthcare. They're not waiting for us to have a meeting and figure out our architecture and get around to application rationalization. They are at our doorsteps demanding that same level of experience. And again, you know, full acknowledgement, that's not an insight that I came up with. It was shared to me by Scott Weber, who's our Chief Marketing Digital Officer. And that's one of the wonderful things about working at Fairview, really working with a lot of smart people. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, if I can do online scheduling, do almost everything, why can't I do it in healthcare? And that's, you know, I think worth 10 seconds. It's not a technology problem anymore. Standard right. EHRs like Epic and Cerner have had that functionality for almost, I think, 3 to 5 years by now. Where it runs into a problem is, can you get all the physician practices to open up their schedules, use a standard template, so that you can actually leverage an online scheduling platform. And I think that's where it helps to have an informatics background, is that I have experienced those gaps, you know, a lot. And I bring that into my job as to, yes, this technology can make a difference, but what is that set of tasks I need to do around change management and workflow analysis, and probably use some design thinking to really enable this on behalf of the physicians and the nurses and other care providers.
So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and today I'm delighted to be talking to Dr. Samir Badlani. He's the CIO of Fairview Health Services, also an internist in his past. And we were just talking about the whole sort of consumer centricity and, you know, the insight that you talked about, which, you know, to me is represented by the idea that, you know, we all check our experiences of, you know, the instant gratification, tracking of a package all the way. But, oh, no, check all of that. Let's move straight back to a paper form as you walk into the healthcare system. And my sense of this is that this massive tsunami, the silver tsunami, as some people call it, that's arriving, they're all going, wait, what? Are you serious? This is, I feel like that's a big push in all of this. And your capacity to sort of answer that is going to be essential moving forward, because they're not going to accept it, right? I mean, you'll be obsolescence at some point if you don't.
Yeah, absolutely. I think well before that, you will lose out on the business competitiveness with your, you know, other health systems around you or new entrants in the market. So I think, you know, the threat or the opportunity, as I like to see it, is very real. It's here now. So as much as I focus on new capabilities and new enablement, I do have probably a very equal amount of time spent on how do I simplify my current stack? How do I leverage an existing technology for more than just what we thought we bought it for? And really focus on enabling our users in their competency in using the system. So, you know, let's take on EHRs for a moment. If you look at some of the surveys out there, organizations that have high satisfaction in the use of EHR typically have 6 to 8 hours of designated EMR training for their physicians and nurses. I can tell you that's not the case at most organizations. So we spend too much time buying new technologies and worrying about the right technology. We spend very little time maximizing the efficiency and the appropriate use of our existing stack. And that's what leads to this application bloat. Another example that I'll share from my past organization at Sutter Health that I'm kind of proud of on behalf of the team that I was working with on the data side. We looked at all the data marts that we had created on behalf of the organization, and the engineers at Sutter Health wrote a very smart query that figured out if that data had been updated over the last 2 years, or if even a single report had been run against that data mart in the last 2 years. And I have to admit, I was surprised. I thought the number would be more like 10% of no use. It was closer to 30%. Of the data marts that we created were of not being used. And when I spoke with people outside healthcare, they were, you know, delighted that we did something like that, and also acknowledged that even though they were in the business of providing IT services, they probably had similar numbers. So I think that focus on spring cleaning, garage cleaning, and rationalization really provides benefit once you turn it into a regular aspect of your work processes. It goes back to lean thinking. And I have a deep appreciation of the lean mindset starting from my time at Intermountain, then Sutter Health, and then here at Fairview, where we are using lean. Honestly, it goes back to University of Chicago now that I think of it. Sharon O'Keefe, the president there, is a lean expert and a Ball Ridge Award winner. So it's probably, I'm lucky, I've been at every organization has really looked at lean as a way to transform how they do work. And I really want to bring lean to the core of IS operations.
So in the limited time we've got left, what comes out clearly from that sort of application bloat and, you know, this digital enablement and the sharing, you know, the ability to share that is interoperability and the conflict that that creates internally within organization. You talk about specifically, if you don't deliver that to your patients, you know, they're going to be upset and you enable. But a lot of this interoperability boils down in many cases, not all, but a lot of the times it's an economic thing. I mean, if you read some of the act, how are you reconciling that in your organization? That must create some challenges and conflicts in terms of that capability, right?
Yeah, I think I would, you know, I look at it, you know, I have the privilege of being on the board of Direct Trust recently. And, you know, through that, I got to participate in some of the public forums organized by the National Institutes of Health and Medicine. And it was very interesting to see how patients and patient advocates look at interoperability. And, you know, that's when I put my listening hat on and really tried to understand what is it that they are saying. And I think where we are missing the boat slightly is we look at interoperability as, do I have access to all my data in whichever organization I go to? So from a pure English definition of interoperability and data sharing, that makes sense. But what I think we need to move forward with is it's just not good enough that, you know, I can get data from any Epic site or any other Cerner site because we are connected through Direct framework or through a Smart on Fire API-enabled framework. The question is, when a patient comes to my clinic, do I have the right pieces of information put together in a way that enables excellent, safe, high quality, efficient care on behalf of that patient? And I think that's where the interoperability conversation has to move to, is how are we leveraging that information to really benefit our patients and enable our caregivers?
Fantastic. So in closing, thinking about the sort of future and, you know, this huge opportunity. I mean, I love the fact that you're in this role, you know, you've got the capacity and all of this experience that plays in. Where do you see things going? Do you see hope? I mean, that's what I'm always looking for. My glass is always full, as I explain. It's half full of whiskey and half full of air, and as a result, full. Where do you see the positives coming out of all of this and your ability to move that needle for everybody?
Yeah, you know, I'm also an optimist. And what I see is that the number of new challengers in the market, the consumer behavior and the speed at which they're driving our response are all wonderful challenges that are going to give us the opportunity to react in a meaningful way. I am, you know, very excited to be part of the Fairview team in partnership with University of Minnesota. And, you know, what I truly believe is that we have an ability to make a difference. The question is, how much focus can we get? How much, you know, reinvention can we focus on to create opportunity for reimagining our value proposition? And I think, you know, we are far away from having a Kodak moment, but if we don't change, evolution will happen to us rather than us leading it. So that's why I'm really excited.
Fantastic. Well, as usual, we've run out of time. So it just remains for me to thank you, Samir, for joining me today. It's been an absolute delight. I always learn so much around you, and I hope that the listeners will too. So thanks very much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Nick. I appreciate the time to talk
Thanks
to
for
you.
Joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, The Incrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.